reading tonight from John chapter 12, the first 8 verses. John 12, 1 through 8. Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there, and Martha was serving, but Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him. Mary, therefore, took a pound of very costly, genuine spikenard ointment and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the ointment. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, who was intending to betray him, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor people?" Now he said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief, and as he had the money box, he used to pilfer what was put into it. Jesus therefore said, "Let her alone in order that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me."
This morning, Dan said to me, "I've got song leading this evening, and what is your topic so that I can maybe pick some good songs?" And I didn't have any good songs to give him, but he really nailed it. You thought it through, and you did fantastic. What a spectacular grouping of songs. That's going to work so well in kind of where I'm headed this evening. The title of my lesson is Reasoning Like Jesus. And so I'm going to be really anchoring in this passage that Greg read, and especially in the end portion of it, which sounds like a very small amount of stuff to talk through. But in kind of classic John the Apostle style, he has packed an immense amount of meaning and depth into just a few short sentences. You know, John is fond of doing this, right? First-year Greek students begin with John 1:1. Simple sentence structures, tiny sentences, huge meaning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He's with God in the beginning. You could preach on that for a year and not hit the bottom of that well. And that's really the way that John is a lot of the times. And he also has this way of speaking where he will insert something and then spin something in just the other way so that we get a very specific understanding from where he's headed. Specifically here in this passage, of course, this story here is a very familiar one to us. The dinner where Mary takes a pound of expensive ointment, anoints the feet of Jesus, and wipes his feet with her hair. It says the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume, very expensive perfume. It says, but Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" A few weeks ago, I gave an invitation, and I talked about the fact that we're in the middle of the political season, right? We're in the middle of a constant bombardment of people that seek to make some sort of claim upon us. Before we came to services this evening, the phone rang. Nobody calls me on the phone anymore, except for robocalls and people who want me to vote for somebody or want me to take a survey. I'm starting to wonder why I have a phone most of the time, right? And sure enough, it was somebody wanting me to vote for, I'm not sure, I rarely listen long enough to figure out who they want me to vote for. And I'm sure you're probably getting the same things. If you're not, consider yourself fortunate. But in this season, everybody calls you. We see friends on Facebook, perhaps. We see articles. We see blog posts. We see newspaper articles. We see things on the television. We see advertisements paid for by one politician or another, one legislative effort or another that they want you to vote for. Everyone wants to make a claim upon you. They want you to take some action. So they seek to tell you something in a certain way that will influence your behavior. That type of speech, that political speech, and understand that when I say political speech, I'm not speaking of political correctness here, but I'm speaking of the type of speech that seeks to influence you, some type of speech that may not be entirely honest, right? It may not give you all the facts you need to really make a good decision. The point is really to influence you to take a particular path. That is exactly the type of speech that Judas is using here. He wants Jesus to do something other than what Jesus did. He uses Jesus' concern for the poor and attempts to influence his mind that way, right? We know, of course, that the church, the early church, had a deep concern for the poor. It's a concern for the poor that comes directly from Jesus himself, right? Jesus himself had a great concern for the poor. Realize that when Paul says he went back to the Jerusalem church, he said they added nothing to my gospel. They merely told me to have consideration for the poor. He says the very thing I was eager to do. So when we understand this passage, we do not understand it to be telling us not to have concern for the poor. And Judas knew that Jesus had a concern for the poor, and he plays upon that angle, okay? He says this statement. He says, why wasn't this ointment sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor? And of course, what he really means is the money given to me to keep in the money box. Political speech becomes manipulative speech. Now, you know this, okay? It's such a part of the fabric of the world we live in now. It has decayed our entire discourse so much, and it's not us. I'm not preaching to you and telling you something about, like, the church that's an issue. What I'm saying is that the world you live in now has downgraded the concept of truth so much that you don't trust anybody anymore. You only trust the people that you already trusted. So a lot of times, the only thing you read during a political season that you agree with is something you already agreed with to begin with. You rarely read something that you disagreed with that makes you think, you know, I'd have changed the way I think. Because, of course, why would you do that? You figure that that person's lying to you. And unfortunately, they probably are. We can look at this and we can say, well, that's politics. And this is the church. We don't have that problem here. But your problem is this. That mindset where everyone believes that they're constantly being lied to all the time by somebody trying to sell them something, somebody trying to get them to vote for somebody, somebody trying to get them to believe something so that they will do the thing that they want them to do, where everything is manipulative political speech, your problem is that it impacts the church's ability to do things like evangelize. When you go out and you try to evangelize the world, what is it that they hear? They hear, politician. Yeah, you want me to do something. You want money. You want me to change my... So you become like a robocall to them. You might be trying to change their mind about something that you and I both know is very important. It's important to their spiritual safety, to their eternal security, right? Yet a lot of people don't hear that. What they hear is, you want me to change my beliefs, but you're just like some politician I disagree with. They have a hard time changing what they believe because around them all day long is a flood, a gigantic cacophony of people constantly making truth claims who are hiding the truth. John, now understand me here. This actually ties in directly with the very next sentence. Because John does something interesting. This story you find in the other Gospels, but this little piece that John puts in here is not found there, right? Listen to what John says. He says, Judas said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Now, I need you to understand that this is not the New York Times. It's not CNN or MSNBC. It's not Gawker or BuzzFeed. It's not a news source. In other words, what do I mean by that? This is not a hint or an allegation from John. This is not John, sour grapes John, doesn't like that Judas guy, telling you something that, know, he's made an allegation. If you were a good journalist, you might go dig into it a bit. And you'd ask Judas, well, were you really robbing? Oh, I never robbed from the money bag. Well, look at that. Now we've got a he said, she said. Who knows who's doing the right thing? John never liked Judas anyway, right? I mean, we tend to read that passage maybe a little that way because that's the journalism we're used to, right? I mean, this kind of sounds that way. It sounds like John's kind of giving us some backroom hints, a little bit of smoky room political stuff going on here. But the problem is, this is not, like I said, the New York Times. This is not CNN or MSNBC. This is the Bible, okay? So when John gives us this is truth. Now, here's the other thing. John's not saying this to you so that you can know that. He's also telling you this because he wants you to understand that Jesus knows this. Jesus knew that Judas was stealing from the money bag. Not only did Jesus know that Judas was stealing from the money bag, but Jesus knows that Judas is telling him this because he'd like to steal more from the money bag, and he likes a lot of money in the money bag so that he can use it as his private account. All right? Jesus knows all that stuff. He's God. Remember, this is John, the very same John who said that Jesus did not need to entrust himself to man because he knew what was in the heart of men. Okay, this is the same John who tells us in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Okay, so he knows what Jesus is like, and Jesus knows everything about this. Judas reads like an open book. When we run into political speech, we lack his insight, don't we? That's a great, can you imagine what it would be like to be Jesus in the political season? I always wonder, it's like you get all these people and all they're showing you is little bits, little slivers of the truth, warping the story so that you'll believe something and yet all of it's motivated by some other thing. And you can't get to the motivation behind it. You want to know, you want to brush all this political mess out of the way so that you can figure out, why is this person telling me this stuff? And Jesus would have seen all that. He would have known what was in the person's heart. He would have known the entire depth of the conversation all the time, knowing exactly what the person is saying behind the words that they say, right? Because Judas hasn't said, hey, you know, I steal from the money bag, and I like stealing from the money bag, boss, and you must know that because you're Jesus, so could you put some more money in the money bag for me so that I can continue stealing from the money bag? Now, the funny thing is that if they had a conversation like that, it would have been two things. It would have been more honest, right? Which is then, I guess, the plus side of it. It would have been a lot faster, too, maybe, because then they could have got that whole thing out in the open, all right? Because presumably, I don't know, did John know at the time that Judas was stealing from the money bag? Maybe. But he's written it in his gospel, so certainly he knows by the time he's writing the gospel. But Judas, Judas has said this political statement. He said, don't you care about the poor? Don't you care about the poor, Jesus? Why didn't you sell it and give us some money? Then we could help the poor. Wouldn't that have been a greater thing than her wasting it on your feet? And John writes, once again, not an editorial statement, not a statement of opinion here, not a statement of the editorial board of the newspaper that's writing, right? But rather a statement of fact, that Jesus said this not because he cared about the poor. Okay, so Judas is a liar, a political speaker here. He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. The reality behind the words can be selfish. You cannot have a real conversation about many things in this world we live in because you can't get beyond that buffer of political speech. Right? I mean, it's a huge flaw in our current mindset. And I don't have a good solution for you about how to deal with that directly. A lot of times, you see this all around you if you watch it. You see it at work, and you see it, you know, just in the discourse we have with each other. A lot of times, we don't talk about the reality of the situation. We don't want to have a discussion about that dirty thing that's in the middle of the room. And so we talk around it, right? And we do little passive-aggressive things. We might try to get somebody to change that reality. And that ends up just offending or causing more problems. And we can't address it directly because if you address it directly, I've told my high school class this, that the problem with addressing anything directly is that there is a natural belief that if you hit something directly, you say, look, we have this problem and we need to do this thing about it, right? Well, that's rude. And if you're rude, you're wrong. That's the current society we live in, right? If you're rude, you're wrong. So if I go now to my brother, my neighbor, not my brother, my neighbor, and I say, I think you're bound for hell. There is no way for you to say that statement and be right. You're right. You know you are. Okay? That's not what I'm saying. You are objectively correct. But the problem is this, that the current culture you live in has said you are condemned for making that statement. You are the one in the wrong. Because you've made a statement that was mean or cruel or rude or judgmental. You're the one in the wrong now. You get an auto judgment against you. It's like an instant reflection, right? Of judgment that just immediately bounces right back on you and smacks you. Like when you were a little kid and you said, I'm rubber, you're glue, and everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. And that's exactly what happens. If you go to your neighbor and say, you know, I'm concerned about you. I can see that you're not inherently a bad person, but you need Jesus. And I'm thinking that you might be bound for hell. Bounces right off of them and sticks onto you. Because of the discourse that we have in our society where we cannot have a blunt, real conversation about anything because there's all that political swirl. It's just a mess. It's constantly clouded everything. I will tell you I don't have a solution for that directly, but I want us to look. The title of this lesson was Reasoning Like Jesus, right? Not like me. So what does he do with this? Jesus does something astounding with this. Jesus says, Judas, you're stealing from the money bag, and I've had enough. And he boots him out of the apostles, and then we don't have any more problems, right? That's not what he does. He doesn't do that at all. Jesus said, leave her alone so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. So first let's look at a couple of things here. What does Jesus not do? Well, the first thing he doesn't do is what I just said, right? He doesn't, we might say, he doesn't directly address the issue of Judas stealing from the money bag. It's not even that he doesn't directly address this. He doesn't talk about that at all. John has put that piece in there so that we would understand what was really going on in Judas's heart. To understand that Judas did not care about poor people at all, but he cared about stealing from the money bag. But Christ doesn't address that piece of this at all. He acts like he doesn't even know that that's going on. He takes this and he bends it in a totally different direction. Before we get to where he bends it, what is the second thing that he doesn't really do here? He doesn't really address, and we'll talk about this in just a second here, but he doesn't really address the issue of the poor, right? So Judas had tossed this thing out there. He'd made this political thing, which is, it's a pretty common thing, isn't it? The idea that, and you've probably seen this happen in arguments where people are talking, and they're having an argument about something, and somebody will pull out, oh yeah, well, there's starving kids in Africa. You know, Trump card. I win the argument with starving kids in Africa. And it's kind of, you know, what Judas is pulling out the Trump card. Poor people, Trump card. Argument win. Right, and Jesus doesn't really address that. As a matter of fact, if we read directly what he says here, it's almost a little off-putting, isn't it? I mean, it sounds almost a little bit dismissive of poor people. It's almost like he said, you know, there's going to be starving kids all the time, I don't care. Right? So he just dismisses the poor people argument, brushing it off the table. Now, I've actually read... I did a little thought process on this because I heard a little snippet of somebody one time that said actually what he's doing is quoting from Deuteronomy 15:11. All right, and what's it say in Deuteronomy 15:11? In the old law it says, "For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land." It doesn't sound like a direct quote of that to me, although imagine what if it is, right? Imagine if it's a little bit of him saying in a very quick scriptural way. I've oftentimes told the Sunday morning class as well that I teach that when you dealt with the Jews, they, you know, the way that you and I would use quick shorthands they could toss scripture that way because they spent so much time memorizing it. And so you have Jesus, of course, being God himself, who understands scripture like no one else, whips out a quick reference to Deuteronomy 15:11, possibly, and essentially rebukes Judas with the statement of, yeah, there's always going to be poor, and you should be charitable with the money back, right? But, you know, whether or not that's in there, it's not a direct thing, because Jesus doesn't want to talk about the money back, and he doesn't want to talk about the poor right now. What does Jesus want to talk about? Jesus wants to talk about himself. Now, if Jesus is not God, and if Jesus is not something very special, then this conversation, he is just arrogant and rude, right? I mean, 300 and denarius was what, a day's wages, right? So almost a year's wages worth of perfume was just dumped on the floor and used to clean his feet with, and he says, yes, that's the right way to do things. Really? But realize that John's making a truth claim about Christ, because Jesus turns the conversation to who he is. Now, he does this a lot, right? In fact, he's doing this kind of constantly, all the time. Just as a quick example, consider Matthew 22, 15 through 21, because they were always using politics to try to catch him, weren't they? I mean, political traps are not new with us, and so this goes way back, and they had so many different factions and different ways, and they figured we can turn some of his followers against him if we can get him to answer certain things in certain ways. And so they would create a little trap. They would make a little thing so that he'd have either a yes or a no, and there was no way for him to win. He's going to lose one section of disciples here, and he's going to lose another section of disciples there. That's a real common tactic. We see that used all the time, right? I mean, if you watch any debates or anything like that, you're going to see it used there as well. The idea that I can separate your followers into multiple groups by essentially creating dichotomies between them, right? And so it says, then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. I'm reading from Matthew 22, 15 through 21. The Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words, and they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, teacher, we know that you are true, and teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinion. Oh, just stop right there. So there, what's that? We talked about that. That's a little more political speech, right? That's a little flattery. Buttering him up a little bit. Why? Get his defenses to drop down, right? That's the way, I mean, we went to buy a car. We bought the last car we bought, and the guy spent 15 minutes telling me how great I looked, right? I mean, it's just like, and now it seems terrible, because the back of my head is thinking, you got to stop this. I mean, it's because it's too obvious. I feel like good flattery should be a little less obvious, but they are just really laid it on thick right here. We know that you're true and teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinion. So they're trying to rope him in, right? For you are not swayed by appearances. Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? It says, but Jesus, aware of their malice, said, why put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax. And they brought him a denarius. And Jesus said to them, whose likeness and inscription is this? And they said, Caesar's. And then he said to them, therefore render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Now, is that a disposition on taxes? I suppose in one way, you could hear it preached that way. Sure, go pay your taxes. But more than that, it's a description, right? It inverts it and points it back where he wants it to go. The concept of the image of God worships God, right? To give yourself to God as the image of God. Because where's the image of Caesar? It's on the money. Where's the image of God? It's on you, right? Genesis 1. Therefore, you give to God what is God, which is you. You give to yourself, to God. So Jesus' goals, his thought processes, and everything that he does when he discusses these things with people who are talking to him, he's a little bit like a black hole. Okay, now go with me here. So he's a little bit like a gigantic gravity well in that he pulls everything into his orbit. You can't go near Jesus and have discussions about political stuff, because it's going to end up all washed out, and you're going to end up talking about the Son of God, his crucifixion, the fact that you should be taking up your cross, the fact that he wants everything from you, the fact that he wants, you know, your entire image to be given to God, all right? So you see how that works, right? He's not interested in talking about Herodians and Pharisees and tax collectors and nonsense like this, but rather he's focused in upon the core mission that he came to do and upon who he is. So you can't go anywhere near the Jesus black hole, if you will, without getting sucked in to that particular reasoning. He completely dominates the conversation with his clear view of who he is and what he came to do. I said earlier that I don't have a direct solution for solving, you know, for answering this society's inability to talk truthfully about things. I think you guys perceive the same thing. We know it's a problem. I didn't construct this sermon as an effort to try to tell you I had some good answer there, but I believe that the concept behind 2 Corinthians 10:5, where Paul says, "We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ," is the mindset that we should aim for, in that we are obviously not Christ. What I wouldn't give to be able to understand and have his insight, right, into the person talking to me. When someone comes to me and they say, you know, they don't want to respond, or they believe a certain thing a certain way, I would love to have insight to be able to look into the depth of their soul and be able to understand exactly why are they telling me this, right? But we don't have that. But if there is a way for us, and I believe that we can increase our inner gravity well, if you will, our mass to pull people into our own orbit, if we have a deeper understanding of our own mission and our own, the mission of the church, the purpose of the church, the mission, the gospel as it exists, the purity of the Word of God, the more that we have that within us, the more that we become like Christ. And the more like Christ we become, the more likely we are to be able to bend those conversations the way that he would have them gone, right? So, in other words, when we're discussing politics with somebody, or they want to discuss it with us more often, is probably the way it is, right? How do you take that conversation to Christ? I mean, that's what he would have done, right? He ends up talking about himself. Now, you don't talk about yourself. That's not what the Christian does. But you end up trying to turn it to talk about him. Now, there's a heavy-handed way to do that that doesn't come out good, right? You know, that's all great, all that presidential stuff, but have you heard about Jesus? And, you know, at that point, you know, that would be an interesting response, wouldn't it? It would be interesting to see how, if the political discussion flees from the conversation faster than the religious one, right? But that aside, right? I would encourage us to increase our understanding of the Word, increase our understanding of the gospel, so that when we have discussions, and I would encourage you, I don't know how to do this. I don't wish to trivialize this notion, but is it possible to have discussions with people, and as we're having it, to wonder, how do I do what Christ did here? How do I turn this? I'm not saying turn it into a game, but to be constantly wondering, as you're discussing something, you know, usually what I'm wondering when someone is talking to me about some political thing is, this is what's usually going on in my head. How do I escape this conversation as quickly as possible? Right? That's usually what I'm thinking. Instead of thinking that, I wonder if I could change my mindset to think, how can I turn this conversation to Jesus? Right? Now, admittedly, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how fast they can run from the room when that happens. But, you know, you've achieved your other goal that way. But in any case, I'm going to try this, and I'd encourage us to try it as well. And this, especially in this season, where I know that most of you don't want to hear about a bunch of political junk, but you end up having to anyway. The interesting question becomes, when you see those conversations, I want you to think about John 12 and wonder, what would Christ have done here to turn this conversation into a discussion about himself? To turn this into a discussion about things that are actually important? Because, you know, in 6 months, we're going to have some other president, right? Of some other stripe or kind. And all this stuff's just going to go again anyway. But at that point in time, when it comes up the next time, figure out, see if you can turn that conversation to Jesus, see if you can spin that around a different kind of orbit, if you will. Take it and see if you can bend it somewhere else. Just a challenge and a thought. I'm going to try to do it. I hope I don't irritate too many people, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, if you're here this evening and you'd like to belong to Christ and you haven't come to Him and you haven't given your life to Him, then really, sermons like this don't mean anything to you. It's the problem. You can do all that you want with turning people's conversations to Christ, and it's a great thing, but the fact is that you're not saved. And if you're not saved, all these things have no meaning to you. So if you're here this evening and you need to come forward, but if you need also the prayers of the church, then we also are here for that purpose as well. If you'd like to be baptized, if you'd like the prayers of the church, for any reason whatsoever, would you come now as we stand to sing?